Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, June 8th, 2024. Oil prices post third consecutive weekly decline. Members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allied Nations announced plans to extend production cuts through next year. But that pledge was overshadowed by Friday's strong U.S. jobs report, which dampened expectations interest rates would be cut soon. That sent crude prices to a third consecutive weekly loss as traders were concerned higher for longer interest rates would negatively impact oil demand. West Texas Intermediate fell 3 of 5 trading days on the New York Mercantile Exchange, opening the trading week with a $2.77 plunge, as the OPEC Plus announcement raised the specter of increased supplies. Prices regained their footing Wednesday, rising 82 cents, and an additional $1.48 Thursday, before dipping 2 cents Friday to close the week at $75.53 a barrel, down from $76.99, or 1.9% at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $72.01, according to Plains All American. Quote, European Union interest rate cuts have been viewed as a harbinger by some for action by the Federal Reserve, but strong U.S. jobs data indicates a higher-for-longer scenario, squashing some optimism in the oil markets, end quote. Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Quote, the weak demand outlook in China, refinery disruptions in Russia, OPEC production cuts, geopolitical tensions, and lower rig count data also factor into our supply-demand outlook. All things considered, from our perspective, it's status quo with our $75 to $80 range for WTI remaining unchanged for the remainder of the year, end quote, he continued. That, he noted, is an acceptable range. Natural gas futures initially yo-yoed on the NYMEX, jumping 17 cents Monday, falling 17 cents Tuesday, and climbing 17.1 cents Wednesday before holding onto their gains. Futures added 9.7 cents Friday to close the week at $2.918 per MCF, up from $2.587 at last Friday's close. Quote, it's another sell the rumor, buy the news type of event, end quote. Jack Weeksel, senior director at East Daily Analytics, told the Reporter Telegram by email in explaining the trading trends of the first 3 days. He noted that storage injections came in about 9 billion cubic feet higher than market consensus. Quote, but prices have nudged upwards since that Energy Information Administration storage report came out, end quote. Drilling activity remains at two-year lows. Drilling activity remains at two-year lows as operators remain focused on returning cash to investors and amid concern about U.S. interest rates. Oilfield service firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count, which it has issued weekly for 70 years, fell 6 rigs to 594 for the week, the lowest level since January 2022. The rig count is 101 rigs or 15% below the 695 rigs active last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil fell 4 rigs to 492, the lowest level since January 2022, and 64 rigs below the 556 rigs drilling for crude a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas fell 2 rigs to 98, the lowest level since October 2021, and 37 fewer rigs than the 347 drilling for natural gas last June. Texas remained unchanged at 287 rigs, down 60 rigs from the 347 rigs drilling statewide a year ago. New Mexico was also unchanged for the week at 107 rigs. California 1 was the only producing state to see an increase, while Louisiana 1, Oklahoma 4, Pennsylvania 1, and West Virginia 1 saw declines. Like Texas, the Permian Basin rig count was unchanged at 310 rigs, down 36 rigs from 346 last year. Eddy County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian Basin, reporting 53 rigs for a second week. Lee County, New Mexico was the second most active, reporting 50 rigs for a third consecutive week. Martin County dropped one rig for 32 at work within county lines. Loving and Reeves counties each had 23 rigs, and Midland County had 20 rigs for a second week. Reagan County remained unchanged at 18 rigs. Upton County also remained unchanged at 14 rigs. Howard and Ward counties each had 10 rigs. Energy Dedicated Software, as a service firm in Barris, said its U.S. rig count rose one rig to 627 for the week, ended May 31st. That's 117 rigs, or 16% below the 744 reported a year earlier. The number of rigs drilling for oil fell 3 to 192 for the week, and is 251 rigs, or 57% below the 443 drilling for oil the previous May. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose 2 rigs to 97, but is 85 rigs, or 47% below the 182 rigs reported a year ago. ConocoPhillips continues to top the list of operators by working rig count with 31 rigs, unchanged for the week. EOG Resources follows with 28 rigs, up 1, and Occidental Petroleum is third with 26 rigs, down 1. In Barris, Permian Basin rig count fell one rig to 312 for the week ended May 31st. That's 44 rigs, or 12% below the 356 at work in the region last year. In Barris' most active region, the Delaware Basin dropped three rigs to 168 and is 25 rigs, or 13% below the 193 drilling in the basin last year. The second most active region, the Midland Basin, gained a rig to see 121 rigs at work, still 17 rigs, or 12% below the 138 reported last year. Looking at trailing 30-day drilling permits, Enverus said the Permian Basin had 798 permits for the week ended May 17th, down from 803 the previous week, but above the 695 seen last year. There were 109 frac crews at work in the Permian during the week ended May 17th, down sharply from 121 the previous week, and 154 crews a year earlier. Fire displaces residents from 8 units at Midland's Renew North Park. A fire in North Midland has impacted 8 apartment units during a blaze that began Friday afternoon at the Renew North Park complex along the 3600 block of Caldera Boulevard. Initial reports indicate that the fire started around 2:34 p.m. during an AC unit repair. Despite the damage from the structure fire, there were no reports of injuries, according to the Midland Fire Department. However, everyone in the impacted units were displaced as a direct result of the blaze. According to the Midland Fire Department, the Salvation Army has been notified. Diamondback Energy launches fifth annual STEM Camp. Diamondback Energy kicked off its fifth annual STEM Camp Wednesday in collaboration with Opportunity Tribe and Venture Robotics. This year, the STEM Camp team partnered with Crabtree Coaching Collaborative and Midland ISD to bring in 4 teachers from the district to help with the camp. The camp is a free 3-week-long event that serves students who are involved in the Opportunity Tribe, an organization that supports students in the Midland and Odessa area. Opportunity Tribe offers a mentorship program for students and gives them the opportunity to attend different camps in the summer. Students can experience robotics and STEM twice a week during June at the camp. Quote, Diamondback has hosted this STEM camp for over 4 years. This is the fifth, and when they were organizing it, they just noticed something was missing, end quote, said Alyssa Crabtree, owner of Crabtree Coaching Collaborative. Quote, that is when they decided we need teachers here because that's the heart of the work, end quote. Crabtree Coaching Collaborative works alongside campus leaders to strengthen instruction in student learning. Crabtree worked closely with the 4 MISD teachers for 3 days last week to prepare for the STEM camp through. Together, they worked on professional development with the teachers by focusing on goal setting, social and emotional learning, targeted backward design planning, and creating a classroom of innovators and collaborators. Quote, what I love about it is that Diamondback Energy understood that we can impact students and make a difference in their life for a couple of weeks, end quote, Crabtree said. Angelica Benitez, a math teacher at Legacy High School, said she learned a lot through the collaboration with others during the three-day training session. Quote, I'm a big fan of the STEM program because when I was a kid, I didn't have access to anything like this, end quote, Benitez said. Quote, I think we're doing a great job, end quote. Benitez said she was glad to be able to join the STEM camp this year. She learned about the opportunity from a colleague and was interested in becoming involved. Quote, I love that they brought teachers in because it's really hard to make an impact on students if you're not around them, end quote, Benitez said. Quote, the engineers aren't usually around students, so I thought it was really fun to come in and help them with that aspect, end quote. Crabtree said the training the teachers received will also help them back in the classroom and that she was honored to be asked to come in and train the teachers. She said it was beautiful to see Diamondback Energy, Opportunity Tribe, Venture Robotics, and MISD teachers come together and work toward the same goal. Quote, the greatest way that we can support our students in a community is to support the educators because they are the ones who work directly with the students day in and day out, end quote, Crabtree said. Quote, for those that are looking to really transform students' lives, partner with your local school districts and schools and support the educators because then you're going to be able to make a bigger and longer lasting impact, end quote. Fatal crash in Odessa involves test drive on university. Odessa. Odessa police and fire rescue responded to a fatal crash involving three people Friday morning at the 4800 block of university. According to the city of Odessa, the initial call came in at about 9:35 a.m. Investigators at the scene of the fatal collision reported two vehicles as being involved in the crash. A Dodge Challenger, and Honda Accord. The Dodge was headed east on University while the Honda was traveling westbound, turning south onto Oakwood when the crash occurred. The driver of the Honda was ejected and died at the scene. The driver and passenger of the Dodge were taken to Medical Center Hospital. Authorities say those in the Challenger were on a test drive from a car lot. Further information was not available Friday afternoon. U.S. Marshals seek public help to find Wilbert Ray Davis. U.S. Marshals and Midland Crime Stoppers are asking for the public's assistance with locating 54-year-old Wilbert Ray Davis. Davis is described as being 6 feet 4 inches tall and 305 pounds. He is currently wanted for murder and is known to be armed and dangerous. If the public has any information that leads to an arrest or charges filed, it will lead to a cash reward. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 432-694-TIPS. Use the P3 Mobile TIPS app or visit 694tips.com. Midland Crime Stoppers reminds the public that no caller identification is ever used and calls will always remain anonymous. Midland man arrested in fatal pedestrian collision. Midland police have arrested a 36-year-old Midland man for his apparent role in a vehicle collision with a pedestrian May 27th on Florida Avenue. According to a statement from the city, MPD reported that the suspect, Danny Paul Rodriguez, was arrested without incident on Friday. Rodriguez was charged with an accident involving death and an accident involving serious bodily injury. MPD reported that one of the two 20-year-old pedestrians involved in the collision has died. Sergio Alejandro Regino Valdez died after succumbing to his injuries sustained during the collision. Following the death of Valdez, Midland police obtained arrest warrants for Rodriguez. On May 27th, MPD reported several subjects outside La Cantina, 200 East Florida Avenue, who were engaged in a physical altercation on the northeast corner of the parking lot. The altercation between the two individuals, which occurred at about 1:50 a.m., then proceeded to migrate into the eastbound lanes of the 200 block of East Florida. Police reported that while the two pedestrians were in the outside lane, they were struck by a mid-size maroon Cadillac SUV. According to police reports, the driver of the Cadillac never slowed for the people on the road. Quote, the SUV was traveling eastbound and appeared to be in both lanes of travel, end quote, MPD said. A witness to the incident reported that the Cadillac turned north after the collision occurred. The driver then fled the scene of the collision. Midland water main break causes partial road closure. The city of Midland has reported that an outside contractor struck a 24-inch concrete water main while boring a fiber line at Wadley Avenue and Ward Street on Friday. The incident caused a water main break, which the city says has resulted in a partial road closure in central Midland until the emergency repair is made. Water customers in this area should not be affected, but the public will continue to be updated with any immediate changes, the city said. The public is advised to avoid the area until the repair is complete. One westbound and two eastbound lanes on Wadley will be maintained until the repair is completed. A stretch of Ward Street immediately north of Wadley Avenue will also be closed. Those traveling south on Ward toward Wadley will have to use a road to go east or west toward Garfield Street or Midkiff Road. Texas Rangers Chevron launch youth grants program. Arlington. The Texas Rangers Baseball Foundation and Chevron are partnering to launch a new grant program focused on funding organizations supporting youth in the Permian Basin. According to a press statement, both Chevron and the Texas Rangers community grants will support nonprofit organizations, schools, or even municipalities operating in the Midland and Odessa area that provide meaningful programming to children ages 18 and under via educational curriculum, after-school programming, or youth sports initiatives. Quote, we are excited to join Chevron in showing both of our organization's commitment to the Midland-Odessa region with this program, end quote, said Karen Morris, Texas Rangers Senior Vice President of Community Impact and Executive Director of the Texas Rangers Baseball Foundation. Quote, we look forward to reviewing the grant applications and awarding grants this fall, end quote. Organizations are encouraged to submit a grant proposal at rangers.com/Chevron Grants, describing how their program can benefit from funding. The application process will remain open through August 16th. Quote, supporting young people in Midland and Odessa exemplifies our commitment to our Permian Basin communities, end quote, said Nicole Barber, the public and government affairs manager for Chevron's Mid-Continent Business Unit. Quote, we're hoping this program will help create home run impacts in the lives of our community's future leaders, end quote. After the review process, winners will be notified of their selection in September. Additionally, those awarded for the grants will be recognized during pregame ceremonies at a Texas Rangers home game later that month. Since its inception in 1991, the Texas Rangers Baseball Foundation has invested more than $70 million within the community and remains dedicated to improving the lives of children in need. Signature programs include the Texas Rangers MLB Youth Academy at Mercy Street Sports Complex, presented by Toyota, the 2018 Allen H. Selig Award for Philanthropic Excellence award-winning Richard Green Scholars, the Charlie Pride Fellowship Program, and the 50th Anniversary Legacy Grant Program. Chevron is one of the world's leading integrated energy companies and one of the largest producers of oil and natural gas in the Permian Basin of West Texas and southeastern New Mexico. Chevron strives to build lasting partnerships in the communities where they operate who empower individuals and foster prosperity now and for decades to come. For more information, visit chevron.com/Permian. Oil Report. Drones play expanding role in oil field operations. Drones are becoming ever-present in society, part of everything from law enforcement to real estate, photography to site inspections. Drones, formerly known as unmanned aerial vehicles, are increasingly becoming ever-present in Permian Basin oil fields as well. Now Midlander Dan Schantz, co-owner of Venture Robotics, is training drone pilots for energy companies. A licensed Federal Aviation Administration Part 107 instructor, Schantz noted that companies like Chevron often have their own internal group of pilots, while others contract out drone services. But he said they need someone to help navigate a constantly changing landscape. Drones are changing in size and adding new features, he said, and regulations are changing to accommodate those changes. For example, Schantz said the FAA is requiring the drones to have transponders. Still, he said, drone use is, quote, still not to its maximum capacity. People are now realizing what they can do. The technology is to the point where it can be trusted, end quote. Drones are increasingly being used to measure for greenhouse gas emissions, which Schantz calls, quote, huge, but also the most expensive, end quote. It requires calibrating laser sensors to measure emissions and search for leaks. They can scan tank batteries for real-time monitoring that allows leaks to be repaired before they become significant problems. There are companies that act as first responders for leaks and utilize drone data to gauge and assess the leaks and determine whether to shut off the leaks. Other groups use drones to scan wind turbines to determine when the blades or engine housings are starting to fracture. Quote, it's the first step in preventative measures, end quote, he said. Their use is being expanded, he added, to include surveys and data collection. The data can be stored on the drone's batteries and then downloaded and analyzed. That can be beneficial in remote areas, he said, saving millions in infrastructure construction costs and providing data when transmission lines are down, say during a storm. Quote, the other big thing is security, tracking who's in a facility, who's outside a facility, end quote, Schantz said. Drones fitted with thermal cameras or cameras with zoom capabilities can help identify certain pieces of equipment to ensure they are where they are supposed to be or if they've been moved. Advancing technology lets drones operate further away. Take the typical hydraulic fracturing job, for example, Schantz said. Quote, you're going to be inside watching the instruments. There's no way to see what's happening outside. A drone can be 150 feet away and the operator can watch the operations on closed circuit television. It's a bird's eye view of operations, end quote. But these uses require trained pilots, and Schantz decided to approach Midland College about a drone program to gauge interest. The concern was there was no set standard for how a pilot is supposed to fly a drone. So he created a course where would-be pilots could get started. Quote, I start with a simulation, then we move on to the smaller drones, end quote, he said. Quote, they behave the same way as larger drones. I tell students, this is what you need to know, or you'll be in trouble. The newest thing I've learned is drop control. I teach them to stick with the controls, end quote. It is pilot licensing, he said, with drone pilots required to earn the FAA Remote Pilot Certificate, also known as the FAA Part 107 license. Not only does he teach them the procedures and best practices to operate drones safely and legally, he teaches the regulations involved and what to expect in taking the certification test. Quote, it is a pilot's license, and you are required to log what you do. The FAA is now also asking for more specifics in what you do, end quote. Moss Lake schedules open houses for pipeline project. Moss Lake Partners in April announced plans for the De La Express pipeline, carrying natural gas from the Permian Basin to the Gulf Coast. As part of its request to use the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's pre-filing environmental review process, a series of public meetings has been scheduled throughout Texas and in Louisiana. Quote, the De La Express pipeline will safely deliver affordable Permian Basin natural gas to Texas, U.S., and international markets to meet energy demand, while bringing good jobs to local workers throughout the state, end quote, Chris Teal, Senior Vice President, Regulatory Affairs and Special Counsel at Moss Lake, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Quote, as part of the Federal Energy Regulation Commission, FERC, process, we're hosting a series of open houses along the pipeline route, including in Midland on June 17th, to gather feedback from local communities, end quote. In Midland, a public open house will be held on June 17th at the Junior League of Midland Mabee Hall, 902 West Engar, from 4 to 8 p.m. A similar meeting will be in Odessa on June 18th at Lawndale Community Center, 9201 Rainbow Road, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and from 5 to 8 p.m. Moss Lake Partners representatives will be leading the open houses, while staff from FERC will be on hand to answer questions about the environmental review process. Edge Engineering and Science has been selected as the third-party contractor to assist in preparing the National Environmental Policy Act documentation, working under the direction of FERC staff. De La Express is a 690-mile-long, 42-inch diameter natural gas transportation pipeline originating at a point near Red Bluff in Loving County to a termination point near Calcio Parish, Louisiana. Five lateral pipelines and eight compressor stations are also expected to be constructed. Those compressor stations will be located in Midland, Sterling, Runnels, Brown, Coryell, Robertson, Walker, and Liberty counties. Multiple meter stations and appurtenant facilities are also planned. The project will carry 2 billion cubic feet per day of liquids-rich natural gas to markets on the Gulf Coast from Port Arthur to Cameron Parish, Louisiana, including growing demand from liquefied natural gas export facilities, as well as Moss Lake's affiliated natural gas liquids export project, Hackberry NGL. Moss Lake has requested FERC certify the pipeline by April 2026, and once the application is filed, it may qualify as a covered project under Title 41 of the Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act. Moss Lake is targeting an in-service date of July 2028 for the pipeline. BPX targeting 60% growth in Permian production. Multinational giants Chevron and ExxonMobil have detailed that their expectations for Permian Basin production will be increasingly significant and important to their operations. BP is now detailing similar plans for its BPX energy subsidiary. In fiscal year 2023, BPX grew Permian Basin production 13% over 2022 and is targeting a 30 to 40% increase by 2025 compared to 2022 levels, the company told the Reporter-Telegram. The company is also targeting 650,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day by 2030, about a 60% increase. Asked how it plans to ramp up production, the company quoted Chief Executive Officer Murray Auchincloss' comments during a first quarter earnings call with analysts. Quote, all the recent benchmarking we are doing is showing us at the top of the pack on the productivity on NPV, net present value for drilling spend, end quote. To grow production, the company is focusing on driving efficiency through technology and digitization, quote, which has paid off, reducing cycle times by 20% and reducing rig counts while maintaining the same volume profile, end quote. In April, the company brought online its third central processing facility in the Permian, quote, Checkmate, end quote, a low-emission electrified facility that will enable further production growth in the basin. Quote, I think that takes our capacity for black oil up to around 100,000 barrels per day, end quote, Auchincloss told analysts. Quote, so I think a lot of the wells are drilled and we should be popping them and filling that up as we move through the second quarter. Conditions inside the Permian are a bit looser. There are more rigs available, obviously from low natural gas prices, making the supply side a little bit better. And no real change from October on the productivity. So we are proud of the team for driving that as well. We are not feeling any constraints on export at this stage. And we are looking forward to getting the fourth and last central facility online around mid next year, end quote. He added that the company has most of its rigs focused just on the liquid window in the Eagle Ford right now, quote, given where natural gas prices are, end quote. Verde Diamondback choose feed contractor. Verde Clean Fuels and Cottonmouth Ventures, a subsidiary of Diamondback Energy, have selected a contractor for its natural gas-to-gasoline facility on a Diamondback location in Martin County. Chemex Global has been chosen to spearhead the front-end engineering and design, FEED, phase of the project. This feed contractor selection is the first step in furtherance of the JDA, which provides a pathway forward for the parties to reach final definitive documents and final investment decision, FID. The facility is expected to be a commercial-scale version of Verity's existing demonstration facility in Hillsboro, New Jersey. Quote, our demonstration facility has enabled us to de-risk the scale up to a commercial plant, giving lenders and other project participants the confidence to move forward with this development, end quote. Ernie Miller, Chief Executive Officer of Verity, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. The expected result of the project is to use Verity's proprietary STG Plus technology to produce about 2,900 barrels per day of commodity-grade gasoline. With the selection of Chemex, feed work will now commence and is expected to be completed in early 2025. Upon feed completion and reaching FID, it is anticipated that engineering, procurement, and construction work will then commence with the goal of completing construction in 2027. Miller wrote he doesn't anticipate any challenges receiving the required permits for the project. Quote, with the potential to mitigate the flaring of up to 34 million cubic feet of natural gas per day, this proposed project could serve as a template for additional natural gas-to-gasoline projects throughout the Permian Basin and other pipeline-constrained basins in the U.S., as well as addressing flared or stranded natural gas opportunities internationally. We're expected to continue to move this potential project forward with a highly experienced partner like Chemex, end quote, Miller said in announcing the selection. Thousands laid off in feud over Exxon's Golden Pass. Zachry Industrial, a construction and engineering firm working to build a gas liquefaction plant for ExxonMobil and Qatar Petroleum, laid off thousands of workers in East Texas after filing for bankruptcy last month. Zachry notified the Texas Workforce Commission of its plan to lay off 4,430 workers in East Texas, according to a list of WARN notices updated this week. The San Antonio-based company said in a statement that it was, quote, forced to take decisive action to protect our business, end quote, after it absorbed, quote, staggering costs, end quote, at Golden Pass related to supply chain challenges that have spiraled since the start of the pandemic. The company blamed the layoffs on Golden Pass LNG, which it said refused to pay for services. Quote, Golden Pass LNG's refusal to engage productively or make good on their numerous empty promises of financial support forced us to lay off employees and seek protection and resolution through a Chapter 11 process, end quote, the company said in a statement. Golden Pass was not immediately available for comment. Exxon owns 30% of the project. Qatar owns the remaining 70%. The project had made headway in recent years as demand for U.S. gas increased after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. If completed, the project would make and export 18.1 million metric tons per year of supercooled natural gas. Zachry said it had more than 6,000 workers at the Golden Pass site in Sabine Pass before the layoffs. Now only, quote, a small group, end quote, of workers remains. Quote, a small group of our employees remain on site to help ensure a safe and orderly transition, end quote, it said. Quote, and we will try to place as many of the other employees as possible at other projects in the region, end quote. Exxon said in a statement that it was committed to finishing the project, which it said was more than 75% complete. We recognize the potential for impact on the timeline for the Golden Pass LNG project, end quote, Exxon said. Quote, we, along with the other stakeholders, are considering all available options to implement a smooth transition and minimize any impacts, end quote. Apache focuses on core Permian for growth. APA Corp., parent company of Apache, is incorporating its new Callon Petroleum assets, focusing on core assets and divesting non-core holdings. Last month, the company announced over $700 million in asset sales, including nearly 24,000 net royalty acres across several counties in the Midland Basin, primarily non-operated properties producing 2,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day. The company also agreed to sell 237,000 net acres in the East Texas Austin Chalk and Eagle Ford plays, with about 11,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day of net production in the first quarter of the year. the Permian Basin will represent an estimated 73% of the total company adjusted production in the second quarter and will receive approximately 75% of upstream capital this year, John J. Christman IV, Chief Executive Officer, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Quote, following the Callon acquisition, our Permian Basin unconventional acreage footprint has increased by about 45%, and our Permian Basin oil production has increased by more than 65%, he wrote. For the remainder of the year, Apache plans to average 10 rigs in the U.S. while actively managing and high-grading the newly combined rig fleet, Christman continued. Quote, as we integrate the newly acquired Callon operations, we have moved some of the former Callon-operated rigs to drill on legacy Apache acreage because we know how we want to develop it. By the time we get to the fourth quarter, we will be executing on programs that Apache has fully planned on the Callon acreage, end quote, he wrote. For the remainder of the year, the company will be revising most of Callon's operational practices and workforce, including contracting and logistics, well planning and design, drilling and completions, facility construction, and many aspects of daily operations. While it will take some time to realize the full benefit of these changes, Christman said the implementation has already begun and is progressing well. Quote, as anticipated, we are finding tremendous opportunities to reduce costs, improve efficiencies, leverage economies of scale, and create value by applying our operational expertise and unconventional development overflows to the newly acquired acreage. Accordingly, in our first quarter earnings, we increased our estimate of annual cost synergies by 50% from $150 million to $225 million, end quote, he wrote. Quote, the most exciting and compelling value capture opportunity we see still lies ahead. That will come from capital efficiency improvements, which will enhance overall development economics and potentially expand the development inventory that form the basis of our transaction value, end quote, Christman said. Pipeline giant keeps its oil arm in Houston as it splits. Calgary-based pipeline giant TC Energy Corp plans to spin off its oil business into a separate publicly traded company, South Bow Corp, with its U.S. headquarters in Houston. Shareholders approved the move on Tuesday. South Bow is shopping for Houston office space to contain approximately 100 employees. Of those, 60 are already here, based at TC Energy's offices at 700 Louisiana, the company said. The separation scheduled to take place later this year divides the company into two independent entities, TC to be focused on natural gas pipelines and South Bow to focused on crude oil pipelines. Contrary to projections that oil demand could plateau this decade as part of a global transition from fossil fuels, South Bow expects oil demand to continue to grow as the world's population and emerging economies swell. Quote, South Bow believes that North America's crude oil supply, inclusive of the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin, is critical to supporting this future demand, and that North American crude oil production will remain a robust and important part of the energy mix for decades to come, end quote, the company said in management documents related to the spinoff. South Bow's business turned a profit of about $1 billion Canadian dollars last year, TC Energy said. South Bow would own 3,045 miles of pipeline after the spinoff, including about 400 miles in Texas, carrying Canadian oil to refineries and export facilities in the Houston area. Its portfolio of assets would include the Keystone Pipeline, a 2,689-mile network of oil pipelines that traverses three Canadian provinces and eight U.S. states. In addition to carrying oil to Gulf Coast refineries, pipelines to be owned by South Bow would also carry Canadian oil to refineries in the U.S. Midwest. Call for natural gas plants in Texas is gaining traction. The push from state leaders to build new natural gas power plants to connect to the power grid operated by the Electric Reliability Council of Texas is gaining traction. Encouraged by a $10 billion funding bill passed last year, a handful of municipalities and quasi-governmental agencies have joined private developers in support of natural gas-fired power plants that, if built, would add more than 55 gigawatts to the Texas grid, nearly doubling ERCOT's installed gas capacity. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, a key supporter of the Texas Energy Fund, approved by voters in November to back low-interest loans, mostly for building new natural gas power plants, said Friday that he and the state Senate would continue to fight for more gas-fired power generation. Quote, since Winter Storm Uri in 2021, I have been abundantly clear that we must bring new dispatchable generation, primarily new natural gas plants, to Texas to ensure we maintain reliable power under any circumstance, end quote, Patrick said in a statement. Quote, by the number of applicants we have seen so far, I believe we have achieved our goal, end quote. Developers have filed 125 notices of intent to apply to the Texas Energy Fund, requesting $38.9 billion in financing for 55,908 megawatts of proposed generation. According to the Public Utility of Commission of Texas, the state's utility regulator, those seeking a loan to finance up to 60% of the cost of their project were required to file a notice of intent by Friday before applications open Saturday. 1 megawatt can power about 250 homes in the hottest summer days, according to ERCOT. Among those taking advantage of the funding source are the City of Sugar Land and the Texas A&M System. Both have offered up land to developers that would use the loans to build natural gas plants. Quote, when we went out to try to attract companies here, honestly, the very first question they asked us was, okay, that's great. Would love to come down to Texas, but what about power? What are we doing to stabilize the grid? End quote. Said Alba Panate Johnson, Assistant Director of Sugarland's Economic Development and Tourism Team. Sugarland city leaders have approved a land lease to build a 146 million natural gas power plant at a mixed-use business park at One Circle Drive, a former prison site acquired by the city in the mid-2000s. The city asked developers to submit proposals to build on the site and plans to announce the selected developer later this year, Panate Johnson said. Sugarland would like the power plant to provide flexible power services to the ERCOT grid and be able to provide backup power to certain facilities in case of a grid failure, she said. Texas A&M is also making some of its vast real estate holdings available to gas power plants. After the creation of the Texas Energy Fund, A&M Chancellor John Sharp said several legislators and private companies called him suggesting the university's land would be ideal for a network of natural gas power plants because its campuses are located near where generation is most needed. Those conversations led to A&M inviting developers to submit proposals to build gas-fired plants on dozens of parcels with existing power lines and gas pipelines it owns across the state. The university is specifically seeking peaker power plants, which are typically activated a few days each year during periods of high electricity demand. Quote, there's a gas line that goes right through the middle of the A&M San Antonio campus. We had kind of looked at that as a problem, and I'm not sure it's a problem anymore. It might wind up being a blessing, end quote, Sharp said. Sharp and Joe L. Bodd, Texas A&M's Vice Chancellor for Research, both envision the peaker plants built on Texas A&M land would be able to supply backup power to campuses in case of a grid failure, which would help the university avoid losing hundreds of millions of dollars of research as it did during the 2021 freeze. Quote, we are really an agent of the state, end quote, Elbad said of the A&M system, which manages eight state agencies, including the Texas Division of Emergency Management. The impetus behind the land rush is what Governor Greg Abbott, state legislators, and the PUCT say is the need for dispatchable resources, those that can adjust their output of electricity at ERCOT's command. Not all agree that more natural gas, the burning of which generates climate warming emissions, is the best or primary solution to Texas grid woes. A report from the nonprofit American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy last year found that expanding energy efficiency and demand response programs could help balance the Texas grid faster and cheaper than building new power plants. Generation resources of all types failed during the February 2021 freeze, which left hundreds dead and many across Texas without power for days. Failures in natural gas production and distribution exacerbated the power outages, according to a University of Texas at Austin report. Who is applying to the Texas Energy Fund? Four of the biggest power generation companies in Texas have formed Powering Texans, an industry group that announced Monday its members had submitted plans to bring an estimated 5,000 megawatts of gas-fired generation to the state grid. Those proposals included more than 1,000 megawatts from Houston-based Calpine, including a previously announced plant at its Freestone Energy Center, an additional 1,600 megawatts from Houston-based NRG Energy, and an additional 2,000 megawatts from Irving-based Vistra, including plans to convert a coal-fired plant to gas. Powering Texans CEO Walt Baum said Thursday that the expected growth of power-hungry data centers for artificial intelligence and crypto mining in the state is one factor that gave companies the market certainty they needed to make investment decisions. Quote, Texas continues to grow, and the load that is coming is big. That is definitely one of the things that is helping drive new investment, along with what the legislature and the PUC has done, end quote, he said. ERCOT in April released unprecedented projections of how much electricity Texas would potentially need by 2030. 152 gigawatts, a nearly 78% increase from 2023's peak power demand. Much of that growth is expected to come from data centers, oil and gas electrification, and increased industrial manufacturing, ERCOT CEO Pablo Vegas said, though some will also come as Texas population grows. More than 340 gigawatts of generation resources are in ERCOT's development pipeline, the bulk of them solar and battery storage, Vegas said, a continuation of the ERCOT grid's evolution towards more clean energy. Battery storage could respond to much of the demand growth, Vegas said, as Texas continues to entice new natural gas generation. Community. MC grad eyes bachelor's degree. Annabel Diaz and Carlos Tarango are Mexican immigrants who moved to Midland in order to provide a better life for their only daughter, Anna. In 2016, the family left their home in Colonia Soto, Chihuahua, Mexico, and headed 2.5 hours through Mexico to cross the border into Presidio. At the time, Anna had just completed elementary school in her small hometown in Mexico. She didn't speak any English, but she immediately enrolled at Abel Junior High in Midland. Quote, I remember that first day of school, end quote, Anna recalled. Quote, it was so big compared to the small elementary school where I attended in Mexico of only 150 students. I cried at school the first day, and then for the rest of that week, I cried when I got home. For the entire first month, I begged my parents to go back to Mexico. Fortunately, I made some great friends, and the teachers at Abel were very supportive. By the time I finished my seventh grade year, I was understanding and speaking English and was thankful to be in Midland, end quote. Anna continued to progress through junior high and high school, making A's and B's during her high school years. She graduated from Legacy High School in May 2022 at the age of 17 and enrolled in Midland College the following fall as a Legacy Scholarship recipient. In addition to being a Legacy Scholar, Anna was also a member of Phi Theta Kappa Honor Society. Last month, she graduated from Midland College with an Associate of Applied Science degree in Business Management. Kevin Goldsmith, Midland College instructional designer and history professor, was Anna's academic mentor and Legacy Scholar coach. He was very impressed with Anna's determination to succeed in her studies. Quote, Anna was such a joy to coach over the past couple of years, end quote, Goldsmith said. Quote, it has been so rewarding to see this exceptionally capable individual set her own goals, surmount really frustrating barriers, and ultimately achieve them. Anna brings to mind the dictum by Sir Edmund Hillary, the first man to scale Mount Everest. It is not the mountain we conquer, but ourselves. Anna has conquered, and it is exciting to see her begin the next chapter in her life's remarkable story, end quote. That next chapter for Anna begins on July 12th, when she will marry Diego Chavez. Then in August, she will continue her academic pursuits at Midland College, working toward a bachelor's degree in organizational management, one of two Bachelor of Applied Science degree programs that students are able to obtain at the college. Quote, I started thinking about a degree in business during the COVID pandemic, end quote, she explained. Quote, while I was stuck at home, I began posting pictures and videos on social media of skincare and makeup techniques. Several makeup companies noticed the posts, and they contacted me and said they would send me their products if I would use them in the pictures and videos that I posted. Some of them even paid me commissions. I since have stopped the social media posts in order to concentrate on my college studies. However, the experience did get me to thinking that I'd like to venture into some type of business around the beauty industry. But instead of pursuing the cosmetology or an esthetician route, I would like to be more involved in the planning, financial, management, and administrative side of the business, end quote. Midland College's organizational management degree path can be especially useful for jobs that are responsible for organizing and overseeing groups of people, like managerial, executive, or human resource positions. In addition, she is interested in perhaps pursuing a career in human resources. Because her fiancé, Diego, works as a transporter for an oil field equipment company, she has also considered starting a business in the energy service industry. Quote, from the beginning of her first class with me, Ms. Tarango demonstrated dedication and desire for acquiring knowledge, end quote. Doug Johnson, MC Department Chair of Business Administration, said, quote, she excelled in absorbing subject content during class lectures, addressing assignments designed to gauge topic mastery, and verifying comprehension via quizzes and exams. Anna has proven herself to be a peak performer. I am assured her accomplishments will be many in pursuit of her life goals, end quote. Anna said that whatever she decides for her future career, she and Diego are looking forward to making Midland their home. Life Tributes, Maxine Mobley, 3/5/1940 to 6/2/2024. Maxine Bates Mobley of San Angelo, Texas, peacefully left this world on June 2, 2024, at age 84. She was born on March 5, 1940, in Walters, Oklahoma, and spent her final days in Austin, Texas, near her son, Michael, and daughter-in-law, Holly. Maxine is survived by her son, Michael Todd, and his wife, Holly McIntosh Mobley, niece, Cherise Bates Bowman, and her husband, Bill, and many friends she made along the way. She is preceded in death by her mother, Maddie Lee Vardell Bates, her father, Burl Balford Bates, and her husband, John Don Mobley. Per her request, the service will be a small private ceremony. Maxine's ashes will be spread in her beloved West Texas and Oklahoma. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to Planned Parenthood of Greater Texas or the Recording Library of West Texas. Louise Good, 2/10/1934 to 6/3/2024. This week, Midland lost Louise Geyer Good, 90, an award-winning teacher who helped mold teenagers into mature adults, a benevolence worker who helped many struggling families, and a jail chaplain and social worker who worked with women inmates. Louise was born on February 10, 1934, in San Angelo, Texas, to her parents, Louise D. and Elsie Geyer. Louise was preceded in death by two sons, William and Richard, and her husband of 67 years. Memorials may be directed to the Jail Ministry of First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701, or a charity of your choice. Family and friends can leave condolences and sign the online register book at www.harper-funeralhome.com. Nellie Maxine Roberts, 11/15/1932 to 6/4/2024. Nellie Maxine Roberts, age 91, went to her heavenly home on June 4, 2024. Born November 15, 1932, to the late Victor Allen Porter and Verla Lindsay Porter in Willard, Missouri. Left to cherish her memories are her daughter Cheryl Hart and husband Steve of Midland, Texas, Rick Maddox and wife Cara of Greenwood, Texas, James Jimmy Maddox and wife Paula of Midland, Texas, John Maddox and wife Debbie of Cibolo, Texas, 10 grandchildren, 29 great-grandchildren, and 6 great-great-grandchildren. A visitation will take place Monday, June 10, 2024, at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel, 1502 North La Mesa Road, Midland, Texas, 79701, from 11 o'clock a.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. A graveside service will be held immediately following at Rest Haven Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland, Texas, starting at 3 o'clock p.m., with Lloyd Wells of Spring Creek Fellowship of Big Spring, Texas. Pallbearers include Jimmy Maddox, John Maddox, Rick Maddox, Bo Murray, Harlan Ray, and Chris Aslan. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at stantonfh.com. Brooklyn Page Zachary, 6/14/2010 to 6/5/2024. Brooklyn Page Zachary, 13, of Stanton, Texas, decided to join her daddy and end her journey here with us on Wednesday, June 5th, 2024. She was born on June 14th, 2010, on a day the sun sat the highest in the sky. She is preceded in death by her daddy, Dallas Zachary, her uncle, Nathan Sodick, and cousin, Jackson Sodick, uncle, Michael Zachary, and uncle, Dale Zachary. Those left to honor and cherish her memory is her mother, Rebecca Lynn, her grandparents, Debbie and Butch Green, Haley and Kyle Zachary, and her aunt, Brooke Sodick Johnson. Funeral services are private. Doyleen Rainey, 10/29/1939 to 5/19/2024. Doyleen Rainey, age 84, of Leander, Texas, passed away on May 19, 2024. Doyleen was born on October 29, 1939, to Sandy and Bernice Little in Big Spring, Texas. She is survived by her husband, Richard Rainey, daughter, Kate Rainey Kellum, son-in-law, Demetrius Kellum, and grandchildren, Riley and Rachel Cusick, son, Chris Rainey, daughter-in-law, Cindy Rainey, and grandsons, Max and Nick Rainey, and cousins, Duchess and Albert Klein, Lee Wetzel, and Marty Wetzel. A memorial will be held at Kelview Heights Baptist Church in Midland on June 22nd at 2 p.m. In lieu of flowers, the family requests a donation to the National Kidney Foundation. Fidel Sotelo Gardea. Fidel Sotelo Gardea, 60, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, June 6, 2024. Viewing will be held Monday, June 10, 2024, from 11 o'clock a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 o'clock p.m. that evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Tuesday, June 11, 2024, at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Funeral Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Carolina Villa Holguin. Carolina Villa Holguin, age 79, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Tuesday, June 4th, 2024. The family will receive friends for visitation on Sunday, June 9th, 2024, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. The rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Funeral services will be held Monday, June 10th, 2024, at 10 a.m. at Ellis Funeral Home, followed by interment at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Wilma Minton, 9/2/1928 to 5/31/2024. Eugene, Oregon. Wilma Reinhardt Minton was born on the White Elephant Ranch in Mitchell County, Texas, to F. and Fay Williams Reinhardt, September 2, 1928. She is survived by a daughter, Terry M. Eames, grandson, Andrew Eames, one niece, and one great-nephew. She was predeceased by her father and mother, her brother, nephew, and foster sister. Remembrances to Wesley United Methodist Church or Wellsprings Friends School. Bertha Camarillo. Bertha Camarillo, 96, of Midland, passed away June 4, 2024. Rosary will be recited at 7:30 p.m. Monday, June 10, 2024, at St. Anne's Catholic Church in the chapel. Memorial Mass will be held at 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, June 11, 2024, at St. Anne's Catholic Church in the chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Leroy G. Wegner. Leroy G. Wegner, 91, of Midland, passed away June 6, 2024. There will be no service. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Clay Weldon Mims. Clay Weldon Mims, 94, of Midland, passed away June 5, 2024. Viewing will be from 10 o'clock a.m. to 5 o'clock p.m., Monday, June 10, 2024, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held at 10 o'clock a.m., Tuesday, June 11, 2024, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.